A steady writer visits us today on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Tricia Yoryu is a writer with 4 books in print and 1 coming next year. We'll meet her and Garrison Keillor with the Writer's Almanac today on Scribble.
Tricia, most people get into writing early in life, and they just sort of happen to come across it. But you got into it in a very interesting way, you were telling me about your first book of poems.
Yes, my first chapbook was written when my daughter was having surgeries done at the Shriners Hospital in Chicago. She was not able to go to preschool because of the therapies and different things. So I wrote a little chapbook for her called My Name is A. And there's a poem associated with each letter of the alphabet that helps teach phonics.
Mm-hmm. And that was the start of it. What did you do with that book?
All of the proceeds from that book went to the Shriners Hospital, and books were donated for the kids with at-risk learning to read because of long stays in the hospital.
It was a way of teaching the alphabet?
Yes.
Yeah, just undermined the whole publishing profession.
Right.
You are giving away the proceeds from this book? Is this American? I mean, what's going on?
Yes, it was to help the hospital.
Uh-huh. What would you say motivates you to write? Is it a deep human impulse like that? Is it the fact that you like to write poetry? Is it that you want to help someone? What exactly motivates you? I mean, I have to be practically forced to sit down to write. What brings you to the desk?
The written word is a really powerful thing. And it's been a part of me for a long time. When I was a little girl, growing up on a farm near the Quad Cities, books and writing were essential for my... That's what I did.
Mm-hmm.
That there wasn't a lot of children around. I was an only child. And books were my friends when I was growing up. And it's become just a part of me and my passion.
Well, I can understand how reading books can take hold, but writing them is something else. I mean, I look at Tweet there. He reads all the time, but does he write?
Not much.
Not much.
And not poetry. I don't. I wish you did a workshop or two, Tricia, because I'd like to learn how to write poetry. But do you think? Do you think you can teach somebody to write poetry, or is that just something that is some, you know, poets are born, not made, Coleridge said?
Oh, I think you can teach poetry. Of course you can. There are many people with doctorate's degrees and far more education than I have. I think poetry, though, is very personal. I think it comes from the heart. I think it comes from inspiration in life. I mean, a lot of my poems, I just can't sit down and write a poem. I look for the inspiration. I let it come to me, usually in the garden. That's why a lot of my poetry is associated with gardens, with nature, with the Quad Cities. The inspiration really is what starts it. And then the words just come. And you can teach techniques. You can teach form and structure. But freestyle, anyone can.
You say the words just come. That's like in the middle of a physics equation, and then a miracle occurs.
Right. Right. Then a miracle occurs.
Right. Well, why don't you give us a couple of samples of the poetry that you write.
Okay. 918 Studio published, it's called A New Life and Other Poems of Living Passion. And because this show is Scribble, mm-hmm. I decided to read, it's called The Bookmaker. The poem is called The Bookmaker. I'll just read it for you. Typesetting, fonts, places, letters, forming words, turning into sentences, turning into pages, bound together for purpose. Words crafted from life, a writer living their story, breathing words, bleeding emotion, onto page after page of history. This is what I do, my passion, my love of words, books, life, binding these pages from the spine of a writer's dream. I think this poem really...
I like that phrase, spine of a writer's dream.
Yeah, that is good.
Because it brings together the nitty-gritty and the dream both together. And I think that's what makes a good poem. A lot of people can take flights of fancy, and a lot of people are drudges, but it's hard to bring those two worlds together, and you seem to have done it in that poem.
Well, especially something as hard and rigid. Oh, I shouldn't say rigid because my spine gives way all the time, but something that firm associated with dreams and with ideas, that is a really good that is a poetic association. Very nice. Well, you.
Well, thank you.
Well, you proved your point. You're a poet. I can see that. But the inspiration for your first book, and it's a chapbook. What is a chapbook?
A chapbook is a small collection of poems, as mm-hmm. a full collection is, I think, over 65 pages.
Uh-huh. Okay, so you wrote your first chapbook inspired by your daughter. What prompted your other books? You have, what, four in
yes,
print now?
Yes, four in print.
Tell us about them. What are they?
Quartered Enlightenment was my second book that was published in 2013. It is a novella written in poetry form. So you can read each poem separate, and it makes sense. But if you read the book together from start to finish, like a normal novel, it tells a story within each poem. And it builds and builds and builds to have a full idea.
A novella, that used to be more popular, narrative poems, than they are now. What possessed you to write a novella in poetry form?
Well, this book started as a garden poem. I was trying to capture the life of a rose throughout the seasons of the year. So what would a rose feel in the spring? What would a rose feel in the summer, in the fall, in the winter? Well, then the rose became a character through the edits. And then the character became a middle-aged woman who went through a divorce and a season in her life. And it just developed, and how she changed and evolved in faith and meaning throughout the seasons.
So did you write the book, or did the book write you?
A little bit of both. It really took on a different form as I didn't expect it.
You know, that happens. I've heard that of that happening. And yet, in order for that to happen, in order for a story to take possession of you or a book to take possession of you, you have to be at it. You have to be involved and committed to doing something. And it is in the middle of that process that the change starts to take shape.
Yes.
So you obviously were setting out to do something.
Yes.
And then the something took over.
Yes. I had an outline. I had an idea, a mission statement, if you will. of what I wanted to accomplish with a project. And you write the skeleton. I like to look at it like this. I write the skeleton of it. And then as you get the skeleton done, then you go back and edit. Well, what could make this better? What do I need to be inspired? What is missing? What is, you know? And then the book kind of gets a breath of its own, and it forms. And this book took about, from start to finish, about 8 years.
Wow.
For me. I'd written it, but I wasn't happy with it, and I just knew it wasn't finished. And we just keep writing. Then, you know, as I said, the roast became a character, became a person, became the antagonist, became, okay, now that we're here, we need to add more meaning. We need to add more depth. We need to add, and then I like the seasons. So we changed the seasons around a little bit. You know, it just transformed until you had that aha moment. Yes, the book is finished.
I think it was Carl Gustav Jung, the psychologist, who said it wasn't Goethe who wrote Faust, it was Faust who wrote Goethe.
Yeah, but in her explanation, which is wonderful because I find that very illuminating, she explained to me why I will never write a book. Discipline, dedication, commitment.
Right. I mean,
those are words that might as well be a foreign language to me.
But I want to make sure we get on to, and we can come back to your poetry, but you have a novel coming out.
Yes.
Is that something totally new for you, or?
Yes.
And how did that come about?
Okay, my novel's called Curling Mom. And
give me that name again.
Curling Mom.
Curling Mom, okay.
Curling is a sport.
Yep.
It's not curling as in hair or dumbbells. It is meaning the sport. It's a story that has been circulating in my brain for a long time. And through conversations with my writing friends, it came to be a little bit more and a little bit more. And as I did with poetry, I made an outline. And because this was my first long subject with fiction, it was a totally different experience than with poetry.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, it takes a discipline, as poetry does, but it's much different because you have the characters playing. And I really found that the characters in the book move the story along. And how they would interact.
Yeah, giving characters their own life is a real talent. That is the thing I've remarked about Shakespeare so many times. All his characters are fully shaped individuals, different from one another. They live their own lives.
Yes.
And getting the characters involved and brushing up against one another, that's where the story comes in.
I think people who don't have a novel published have no idea that getting the novel accepted is only the beginning of the process, right?
Yes.
You have an editor who's kind of mean. let's start at the beginning. How in the world did you get it accepted in the first place?
Okay. Olympia Publishers in London have accepted this manuscript.
Did you just send it to them?
I did. I, through research, found that they published my genre of book, and it's an upscale women's fiction. And I sent them a query letter with a synopsis of the book, I think January of this year. And a couple of months later, in fact, I almost forgot that I sent it to them, sent me, you know, we're interested.
Mm-hmm.
Your query letter sparked our curiosity. Would you send us the first three chapters? So I did. And a couple of months went by, and I heard from a different person from that company, and they said, you know, we are really interested. It's women's sports. There's not a lot of books about it, but it's not completely about sports. It's more the interaction of these women on a team and the support of the team. And, you know, we like to see the first 100 pages. So I submitted the first 100 pages to them. And then in about a month later, they said, we'd like to see the entire manuscript. So I sent that to him, to them. And it was only a matter of a couple weeks that they sent me a contract.
Okay.
It sounds so easy.
Then what?
Then what? So there was back and forth of the contract a little bit, and they started editing.
So, and were you happy with the editing?
I haven't seen it completely yet.
Oh, I see. Well, yes. We were in for a surprise.
Yes, I've gotten a few
but
emails.
But they've asked you to toss out chapters?
One chapter has disappeared. They felt that it stalled out the story a little bit. There's been a few minor character changes. I'm sure I've missed thousands of commas and, you know, all of the grammar.
Well, Tricia, before we run out of time, we're heading up toward the Christmas season, and you have a book, I think, that's available at Botanical Center?
Yes. All of my books are available at the Quad City Botanical Center, if you're local. And all of the proceeds from my books that are purchased at the Botanical Center's gift shop remain at the Botanical Center.
You know, I hope you have a daytime job or something.
Yes, I do. Yes, I like my books to support the Quad City community.
Well, that's great. So all of your books are there, not just...
Yes.
We've heard of two. What are the names of the others?
A New Life and Other Forms of Living Passion and A Bizarre Sentence was my most recent.
That should be the title of whatever I write.
Right.
A Bizarre, B-A-Z-A-A-R as well. Well, I must say, Tricia Yorgue, it's been very interesting to talk to you, and I'm fascinated by your careful, deliberate, disciplined advance into the ranks of authors. I won't say you inspire me because I don't, that requires discipline, no. I'd rather loaf with tweets. But Tricia Yorgue, and she has books available at the Botanical Center in Rock Island and a new novel coming out next year. And what we have coming up right now is Garrison Keillor with the Writer's Almanac. Support for Writer's Almanac on WVIK comes from the Mississippi Valley Regional Blood Center, working together with volunteer donors to provide blood products and services to hospitals throughout the region. Information at bloodcenter.org. Now we go to the book bag, and normally, Roald, I lean on you to give recommendations.
But you have a winner right there in your very hands.
I have an extraordinary book. It's called The Theater of War by Brian Dorries. I have talked about this in several settings, having heard about it, but now that I've read the book, I must say I really want to recommend this. And part of this is quite personal, because Brian Dorries got interested in Greek tragedy. And he tells a story, approaching it, I think, from a very personal point of view. He had a friend who had, I believe, cystic fibrosis, which meant she was going to die. And toward the end of her life, they fell in love and moved in together, and he was there witnessing her death all the way through to the end. And that deepened his appreciation of Greek tragedy, which has to do with life, life as it's lived and life as it ends. He had the idea that these plays, which speak so profoundly and passionately about various aspects of life, could serve a useful purpose. And the immediate thing he thought of was returning veterans. When he read the Greek tragedy Ajax, he became a classic scholar, and it's interesting to hear his story, how that happened. But he translates the plays for himself. And he wanted to do a reading of this, of Ajax or Philip Tetis, both about wounded warriors. Ajax commits suicide. Philip Tetis is abandoned. And he wanted to do a reading for veterans. It took a lot of doing. People thought, oh, no.
I can see that.
Yeah. But he did. And it was an overwhelming experience. The veterans responded. What he did was have a reading, and then he had a little panel of people commenting,
right.
And then he took questions from the audience. And it was in this one, the first one, it went along okay until I think a nun who had been tending veterans for a long time. She came up to the microphone and says what she has heard over and over again is what happened to Ajax. The generals betrayed us. Whoa, that set off a firestorm. But it woke people up to the fact that there's something going on in the life of a soldier that a general doesn't know, doesn't really understand. And the increasing rate of suicides. We have a suicide every 22 hours of someone in the military or a veteran.
I think it's 22 minutes.
Well, I hope it's not that frequently.
I think it is.
All I know is that it is a scandalous situation. And what has happened, the word spread and he began to do this more and more. And all of a sudden, changes began to be made. Officials began to pay attention. And suddenly they found that these plays are healing. Or at least they help you understand and see yourself. Because the Greek tragedies are about the essentials of life. They truly are. Then later on, he picked up another play, Prometheus Bound, to do in a prison. Now, Prometheus is unjustly accused. And the thought was, wow, wouldn't this make the prisoners rebel? But it was the corrections officers who saw themselves in the role of Prometheus.
Right.
And I tell you, it is a fascinating book, deeply felt, beautifully expressed. And if you don't know anything about Greek tragedy, you know, after 6 years in the park, we have but scratched the surface locally.
Right.
This is a book that will shake you. It's by Brian Dorries. I think that's how he pronounces his name, D-O-E-R-R-I-E-S. The nice thing is it's soft cover, so it's not going to cost you a bundle.
How did you come across it?
I read a story about him a long time ago. And, of course, anyone who is doing anything about Greek tragedy certainly interests me. And so I looked into it, and I thought, this man is on to something important. And whereas we do the Greek plays in a somewhat restrained fashion with masks, they howl and scream and so on. And it has had a real impact. So if you want to read a book that is shaping some things in our society, it's The Theater of War, What Ancient Greek Tragedies Can Teach Us Today by Brian Dorries. It's in paperback. Gary Trudeau says, a deeply humane quest, beautifully recalled. And with that, we'll bring in the theme, and I've monopolized the time, but you can have a turn next week.
I will do that.
Okay. I'm Don Woot with Roll Tweet. Thank you for joining us today, and be back again next week for another edition of Scribble.